And there you are. I was just thinking about you. Yes, I know. Hardly surprising when I'm the one that invited you over. But don't you dirty the sentiment. It's good to see you. Now come on in, old friend. We've got lots to talk about. Well, blimey, Catrick's Wazy. I don't think I've seen her this excited since I switched her over to Sheba. Have you moisturised with fish paste or something? She's all over you. Settle down, Petal. You're about 2 licks away from giving them a skin graft. That's it. Come on, settle in. Aw, she's missed you. And so have I. I'm sorry it's been so long. I know it seems like I spend most of my time sweating by this fire, eating biscuits and just talking to myself, but running this museum actually takes a lot of work, you know. And I've had such a lovely response since I opened up the olfactory doors that I want to thank you for taking such an interest in it, and anyone else you might have told about it. It's you that's helping me keep the lights on, and the biscuit tin full. Oh, didn't realise they'd all gone. But I mean it. It is. It's down to you. So thank you. It's been wonderfully busy, though. I've been like a bloodhound all over town, sniffing about the place, collecting more smells and memories. It's been so nice getting some fresh scents bottled, one of which I'm excited to share with you today. It's another smoky scent, actually, and one I'm very familiar with myself. But not in the same context as the delightful Gary Andrews, who kindly took the time to bottle it with me. Gary, amongst his many skills, is an animator and director. You might know him as Gary Scribbler on Twitter, where he shares his wonderful doodle diary. It's something he started back in 2016, initially, I believe, as a little grounding ritual, where he took time each night to put pen to paper and do a little sketch based on something that happened that day. A daily habit that he and his wife, Joy, used to enjoy together before her unexpected death in 2017. His doodle diary took on a whole new meaning from that point onwards, and it became a sort of therapy for Gary as he tried to navigate his way through his grief and widowhood in all its painful, powerful, and unpredictable glory. I've long followed Gary's doodlings on Twitter. They are beautiful, tender, often sad, but also sometimes funny little snapshots of life. Often bittersweet, I'd say. Yeah, bittersweet. My favourite flavour. They resonated with me on a deep level, as I think they have with a lot of people. And not just because I've experienced grief, but because they capture these often overlooked, quiet moments in life that come and go at such great speed. We often forget to take the time to stop and cherish them, which is what I've always tried to do with the olfactory. So I was over the moon when he shared his favourite scent with me and why it means so much to him. And that scent is wood smoke. Here. Have a whiff of this.
It's not an unpleasant smell. It's not a bitter smoke. It's not a smoke that bites the back of your throat. It can make your eyes water, but in a good way. It's, strangely enough, woody. But it's also a very natural smell. Some fires can have that acrid, man-made smell to them, but wood smoke feels older. Feels primal. And when I first smell wood smoke, I just feel happy and calm. And like I'm in the presence of something old. Because for me, wood smoke is the smell of history. being a massive history buff, I love myth and legend and all this kind of thing. I always smell wood smoke and think that's what the past smelt like. Spiritually, I sort of follow a pagan path. So for me, the old smells, the old times, the old world, you know, it all comes together. So when I'm around wood smoke, I just feel like I belong. My oldest memory of the smell of wood smoke, really, my best friend used to live in an old Elizabethan farmhouse, and they had a massive open fire, so they were always burning wood. It just takes me right back to my childhood, all the happy days we used to spend in this house. But the most poignant memories for me are the memories it conjures of my late wife, Joy. She was taller than me. She was a whisker under 6 foot, and I'm only 5'7", so that was quite cool. She was beautiful. She was funny. She was clever. But I think above all, she was kind. She always had a smile for everybody. And a laugh that would light up a room. After she died, everybody said the thing they miss most was her laugh. You couldn't help but laugh along with her. I first met her when she was 15, but she was just a kid at the theatre who happened to be a very talented actress. And I thought, wow, she's what a clever kid. And she came back from university and she was this grown up all of a sudden and had blossomed into this incredibly beautiful woman. And as I say, was this extraordinary talented actress. Being tall, she was the perfect Helena in A Midsummer Night's Dream. So I cast her as that, and she was hilarious. I mean, definitive. It was so good. And we became such good friends doing that, and we realised we had an awful lot in common. We just found ourselves in this habit of sort of going around each other's houses and watching movies and getting takeaways and chatting and stuff. And I used to sit there thinking, God, some guy's going to be so lucky one day. She's so hot. She's so cool. And we were sitting there watching a film one day on her sofa and we were chatting away. And we turned to look at each other and we both went silent at the same moment. We literally, at the same moment, fell. We felt this rushing sensation and we realised that we had literally, literally fallen in love. And afterwards, we both described it as that bit in Stargate when they fall into the big circle and go whooshing through this sort of wormhole. It changed, 180-degree change at that moment, from being friends to just realising that we just wanted to be together. It was one of the most extraordinary things I've ever known in my life. She was cruelly taken away from me by sepsis at the ridiculously young age of 41. And completely out of the blue. Which obviously was like having the wind completely taken out of my sails. But we had 19 perfect years and 2 wonderful children. I have to look back at it and think, not everybody gets to be that lucky. I'm going to be thankful for that till the day I die. One of the things we used to do, we had a little company and we made films. And our company is called Ego Trip Media because it was the two of us and we did everything. But it meant that we were together 24/7. And so making the films just became this extension of our life. There was no distinction really between work and fun for us because it was all fun. The last couple of films we made were based around ancient folklore and myth and legend, which involved a lot of location shooting. And on pretty much every location, there was a fire, either as part of the scene or to give us smoke or whatever. So the memories I have of shooting these films with her, which were just the happiest, most wonderful times. I mean, I remember one of the filming days on the last film we made. It was this incredible Saturday where we were filming a whole sequence set in a Saxon great hall. We'd hired this place in Kent, which is a reconstruction of a Saxon longhouse. We had about 30 guys in full Saxon gear, and we were filming in the house, and there's this massive fire pit in the middle. And the fire was burning all day, giving us this blue haze in the room, and my children were both there. My son was actually in that film, and it was the day before his fourth birthday, so he was playing as a little toddler. He was crawling about, dressed as a little tiny Saxon. We had 60 setups to do in one day, and we were all just working as a team, and I kept looking across and Joy would look at me and we'd just smile at each other at just how much fun we were having. And then driving home in the car and getting home that night and all our clothes still smelling of wood smoke, and I just didn't ever want to wash them because it smelled so wonderful, and it felt like I'd been back in the past living it. Yeah, such powerful, powerful memories. And every time I smell wood smoke, whoosh, I'm right back there seeing her smile. And then, you know, I miss her horribly. But, you know, whenever I smell that smell, it just all comes racing back. So the weekend before Joy died, we'd been down to a fairy festival in Glastonbury, selling DVDs of the movie that we'd made. That fantastic Saxon longhouse and all that, we'd finally finished the film and we were selling DVDs and we took the kids down there and I basically stayed on the stall the whole weekend while she went around Glastonbury buying cool clothes and jewellery and going up to the tour and visiting the Chalice Well. And, you know, we'd go to the pub in the evening again, you'd smell, you know, the wood fires in the pub and eat a curry and listen to folk music. Just the perfect weekend. It was like our idea of heaven. And then on the Monday, she drove me to Heathrow because I was off to Canada for business. So she dropped me at Heathrow, bye. And I said, bye, see you next Monday. And phoned her up on the Tuesday, said, hey, how's it going? And she went, oh, I've got a cold. I went, ah, oh, you always got a cold when I'm away. Every time, it's like, yep, every time you go away, I get poorly. It's like, oh well, look, you know, have some Lemsip, you know, put your feet up. And then the Wednesday, I called again, how are you going? Ah, still feel rough. The kids have gone to grandma's for the day just to give me a bit of peace and quiet. I've got the dog on my lap and I'm watching TV. I was like, oh, look, you just rest, you know. And then Thursday I was out at lunch and I got a phone call from her sister who'd come over to see her and saying, is there any chance you can get an early flight? Because the doctor's come and she's going to be taken into hospital. So I went, oh, okay. Jumped onto the website and got a flight for that night, for the Thursday night. In the middle of all that, I got another phone call saying, have you managed to get the flight? And I said, yeah. They said, good, because it's she's pretty poorly. And that's all I knew. I knew nothing beyond what that meant, pretty poorly, because nobody did at that point, really. While I was in the air on the flight, I was just playing over and over in my head all the different scenarios. You know, what could be the problem? What does it mean? Is she going to be in hospital for a few days? Is it going to be a couple of weeks? About to look after the kids? Is there going to be something seriously wrong? Are we looking at long-term problems? And obviously, one of the scenarios that does go through your head is the worst-case scenario, but you don't think that's going to happen. And I landed UK time sort of around midday. And I had a coach booked to take me home. But when I came out of the thing, there was Joy's brother and her mum at the airport. I was like, oh. So they took me to the car, sat me in the car. And that's when they told me that She died at 3:15 that morning. I then had an hour before we got home because they'd managed to keep it from the kids. The kids knew she'd gone to hospital, but they'd managed to keep it from them what had happened. So I had an hour to get my head round it, and then I got home and I'd take the children out into the garden and tell them that Mum had died. So that was quite a, as you can imagine, powerful and life-changing experience. People often ask me how you get through something like that. What do you do? For me, I had the children, and the children needed me. And the children were the first ones to sort of snap me back, if you like, because I told them that Mum had died, and I didn't beat around the bush. I used the D word straight away. You've got to say she's died. You mustn't say passed away, gone to sleep, gone to heaven, all that. I said to her, Mum, you know, Mummy died. So we were sitting there and we cried for 15, 20 minutes or whatever together, just holding them. And then the tears sort of slowed down and stopped. And then they said, what's for tea? And you go, yeah, tea. Yeah, good point. You know, the clock's still ticking. Time moves on. They've got to get fed and get dressed and go to bed and get up tomorrow and do other. So what's for tea became the kind of thing that snapped me back into the present. And it wasn't a case of having to be strong for them, because that's rubbish. Because I said to them, look, I'm going to struggle. My heart is broken. I've lost Mummy. You're going to see me cry. I'm not going to hide anything from you. You're going to cry. You don't need to hide it from me. You know, we're in this together. But a wonderful thing happened when I spoke to one of my friends who's the chairman of our little theatre where we met, where we spent a lot of our time. He was one of the first people I told on the Friday. And he said to me, how do you feel about if we open up the bar on Saturday for a few of us to get together just to process this? And I went, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. So we threw the bar open in our little theatre thinking, you know, 20, 30 of us might get together to say what just happened. And it was packed. You literally couldn't move. People came from Gloucestershire, came from London. There was must have been 150, 200 people in that bar throughout the evening. He had managed to put together a little sort of set of pictures of her where she was projecting on TVs around the room, and we'd all talking about her and looking up. And it was an extraordinary evening. It made me think of how death used to be dealt with. And this goes back again to my love of history and the ancestors and the past. That's almost celebratory, like you celebrated the life. Like the Irish still do it with the wake, where you celebrate the life of the person. It was 24 hours after she died. Well, 36 hours, I suppose, after she died. But there was laughter, as you remembered some of the fun stuff about her. There was tears, and, you know, it was just an extraordinary outpouring of love and memory. And a really good example of how to stick two fingers up in the face of death and go, you know what, you might have taken her away from us, but we're damned if you're going to take away all the memories that we've got of her. It's been just over 3.5 years now since Joy died, but she's still present every day. Her name comes up between me and the kids every single day. Everything about her carries on. The lessons that she taught us, the example she gave us, we must live by that. And we honour her memory by laughing and by remembering the good stuff. There's a saying, isn't there, that nobody is ever truly dead while they're still remembered. Which is why I'm so grateful that there are so many things that can bring those memories back. There are so many triggers with theatre and Shakespeare and walking in the woods and smells like the smells of wood smoke. I often say to the children, you know, about when they did say to me, you know, what happens after you die? We go, well, I said to them, nobody really knows, but we come from stardust, we go back to stardust, we are energy, it dissipates back out into the universe. So mum is everywhere. She's a breeze on your skin. She's the butterfly there, she's the sunbeam through the trees, she's the wood smoke floating through, being caught by the sunlight. That's her, because she's everywhere.
Nobody is ever truly dead while they're still remembered. Isn't that beautiful? And there's so much truth to it. Sometimes, I look around at all these bottles lining the walls, filled with their scents and memories swirling around. And it's almost as if they're breathing. Like I can feel their energy. All these emotions pulsing rhythmically in place, leaving a trail of gentle vibrations that ripple through the woodwork and into the bones of this dusty old place. As I sit here by the fire some nights, with nothing but the crack, pop, and the hiss of the wood burning, I wonder if all those intense feelings bottled up inside their little gas chambers might just explode one day, pop their corks, and fill the room with their invisible yet undeniably palpable presence as they race to greet each other. It'd be quite the ball, I know that for sure. And I know that might sound silly to some, I know, but they feel so alive to me, they really do. As alive as they are for all my friends that have shared these precious scents and memories with me so far. And I feel honoured that they trust me with them. Oh, and I forgot to say, Gary's wonderful doodles have been turned into a book, the aptly titled Finding Joy. Search for it online and it will come straight up. I honestly can't recommend it enough. Maybe as a little gift to yourself if grief is something you've been gripped by, or you're supporting someone else on their journey. There couldn't be a more gentle reminder that even through some of the deepest pain you could ever imagine, there is joy to be found. As usual, I've chewed your ear clean off, haven't I? Ooh, and I better get away from this fire before I blow up like the Wicker Man. I thought I'd make an effort for you today, you see, but I've realised I went in far too hard with the old hairspray this morning to be this close to an open flame. And you better get on, hadn't you? And you'll come back and see us again soon, won't you? I'll be here. And I'll have this filled next time. And make sure you have a little think about what scent conjures up the magic elixir of memory for you. Because I'd love to hear it. Keep telling your friends. And keep telling your family too. As you know, there's plenty of room on the shelves yet. Send me a message to theolfactorypod@gmail.com. if you've got a story you'd like to share with me, and Katrick and I will get back to you as soon as we can. Go on, and I'll see you next time. Smell you later.